Mark, T-minus 1 minute and continuing to count. A water deluge system now has been turned on, activated at the pad area. Pressurization taking place now. The various tanks aboard the vehicle being pressurized. Switching to internal power. All stages switching now to internal power. All propellant tanks being pressurized. Count continuing smoothly. The water at the pad covering the flame deflectors. Now we passed the 30-second mark. Water also will be coming on to the decks of the mobile launcher at the ignition point. T-minus 20 seconds, and the countdown continues to go smoothly. Guidance release. T-minus 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8. We have ignition sequence has started. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. And we have a liftoff. The Skylab lifting off the pad now, moving up. Skylab is toward the tower.
Houston is now controlling. The 18 seconds pitch and roll program started. SIDAR now maneuvering to its proper flight path attitude. Mark 25 seconds.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the show, Fear of a Flat Earth. Today, I am very, very excited to bring you my very first interview with the one and only Roberta Glass. She's a journalist, and she has her own podcast called Roberta Glass True Crime. You can Google that. I listen to it on YouTube. And I got the notifications and the bell, so I get notified whenever that, whenever she's on. It's one of my favorites. It's just fun. She's fun to talk to. It's like a casual, take on things, but she talks about a lot of cool, just fun. It's fun. It's fun. She does the true crime thing in a fun way, and I love it. So, yeah, without, as they say in France, without any further ado, here we go. Let's get this show started. All right. Over and out. Cool. So welcome, Roberta Glass, to my podcast. My name's Tony. And it's, yeah, we're here. How's your day going?
Great. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Okay. So I was just looking at the complaint, right when you called. So let's see. Okay. So let's just start off. Like, my first question is, what is Nexium in your, like, how would you describe Nexium? What is it?
Okay, sure. Nexium is a 20-year-old cult led by Keith Raniere, who it's based in Albany, who Keith Raniere describes himself as the smartest man in the world. He claims he has a 220 IQ, and they provided what they described as an executive success program, or ESP for short. So they would offer courses for people, you know, human development courses in the Albany area. But within Nexium itself, there was also a, quote, female empowerment group called Jeunesse. And within that Jeunesse,
How do you spell Jeunesse? Group. I apologize.
Oh, I'm a terrible speller.
No worries.
It's a made up word.
Is it an acronym?
I think it's J. No, it's not an acronym. It's just a made up word. So I would think it would be spelled J-E-N-E-S-S-E, Jeunesse.
Okay, sure.
But yeah, it's not an acronym. That's a good question. But it's not an acronym. But DOS is, which is dominant under submission, dominus o submissionis, whatever in Latin.
Right? Isn't that one?
Over submissive.
Yeah, that one's like a sort of made up Latin. I'm sorry,
that's a real Latin, you know, phrase.
Okay.
But the Jeunesse is a made up word.
Right.
Because they like the sound of Jeunesse. You know, to me, it sounds like a douche or a, you know, a tampon or something.
But, yeah, sure.
You know, to them, I guess.
The
women were told.
Yeah.
Huh?
I was going to say, they've got Vanguard. It reminds me of Vanguard sounds made up, but it's based on, I think, a fantasy novel. There's a character in a novel that's based on.
Yeah, have you heard that? Video game too. His favorite video game. So
I was hoping you'd know. I'll have to look it up.
That's what Keith Raniere was called, by the way, Vanguard.
Right.
And his second in command, Nancy Salzman, was called Prefect. So that's kind of it was. That, and she was a neurolinguistic programming expert.
Interesting.
And there's now they've been arrested. Now Keith Raniere's been arrested. Nancy Salzman, the actress Allison Mack, has been arrested. Kathy Russell, Claire Bronfman, who is the heir to the Bronfman fortune, the Seagram's, you know, fortune, has been arrested. Is on trial. Am I forgetting anyone else who is? I feel like I'm forgetting one other defendant. Nancy Rose, Claire, Keith, Nancy. Maybe not.
I think, yeah.
If I think of it, is that it? Yeah. And so they're all, I've been going to the hearings in Brooklyn. The trial's supposed to start at the end of April, but no one really believes that it's going to start. There's supposed to be another superseding indictment coming. They're, you know, charged with sex trafficking, money laundering, you know, all kinds of fraud. This was also, they also had daycare centers called the Rainbow Cultural Gardens. It was international. They were in Mexico. They were in Canada. And when Keith Raniere was caught, he got word that he might be arrested, and he was caught with his harem of women followers in Mexico using encrypted devices and encrypted cell phones and encrypted computers.
So, yeah.
I should tell you something about why he's not getting bail.
So. Well, okay. I'm like jumping my questions here, but that kind of leads into, I was going to say, I know, I had seen, tell me if this is true, that I think Jeffrey Epstein was involved, is somehow connected to this case now?
I haven't heard that.
Okay.
How so? What did you hear?
I thought I'd seen that that was somebody that was listed as some. I haven't recently reviewed the Nexium stuff, so I may have just conflated that with another case. But I know that there's connections. Like I was gonna say that that they filmed that show Smallville here in the town where I grew up in Covina. They filmed a lot of it out here. So that's kind of like I just thought that was a crazy connection, but it seems like I was gonna also ask, I guess I'll ask this. I know that in the original indictment they had mentioned that they were trafficking or that there was child sex abuse charges.
Right. Child trafficking, yeah.
Yeah.
And no one knows anything about that. The information about who those victims are and the details of that We really don't know yet. So we're just waiting, really, to the trial to hear more information about that. But, you know, you really bring up a good point when you bring up Jeffrey Epstein or, you know, the stories that get connected to NXIVM. Like, there was this guy, Ben Shemkis, who came out and said, I went to a NXIVM party in Connecticut, and Allison Mack was there, and Stormy Daniels was there, and, you know, this real tall tale, and, he got a lot of hits on this YouTube video. Then he said that he was, you know, missing and feared dead. He put out that report, and, you know,
I remember.
He got a lot of people believing that story. I mean, it's been debunked 6 ways till Sunday, you know, just with details that he put in that, you know, this person didn't know this person at this time, and, you know, it just couldn't have happened that way.
Right.
But it's also been, you know, taken by the conspiracy community to be like, the Clintons are involved with the sex trafficking because Claire Bronfman was involved with the Clinton Foundation. But that's really, and her father, Hillary Clinton, went to her father's memorial service. But those are, and it was even reported that her sister, who was also involved in the cult, was a aide to Clinton. So they wanted, you know, the conspiracy community loves to bring Hillary Clinton's, like, their favorite villainous character.
Yeah.
But what those stories do is they take away from the real evidence and just confuse everything. You know what I mean? So that you can't really tell fantasy from reality. And it's really good for Keith Raniere and the people on trial to have these stories kind of swirling around.
Because
no one knows what's sort of a rumor and what's kind of like a loose affiliation or a close affiliation, you know?
Okay, I was going to say it's fun because we're jumping through a lot of my questions, but you set me up perfectly for this next question, I think. I hate to even bring it up here's my question is, Pizzagate, on a spectrum of it being, the conspiracy theorist's, worst nightmare, and there not being such a thing as sex trafficking, how fake is that conspiracy, in your opinion?
That's a really interesting question, because I was just discussing it with William Ramsey, because he is a believer in the Pizzagate theory.
Mm-hmm. That's how I came,
And, you know, and someone I really admire and like a lot, and so I've been really meditating on this subject, and also I'm someone who is very evidence centered, and I'm concerned with Pizzagate. I've looked at the emails. They're obviously talking about, John Podesta is obviously talking about something in code. I'm not convinced that pizza, I haven't seen enough evidence that pizza and cheese, I probably lost half of your audience right here. I know this is an unpopular opinion, but pizza and cheese means little boy and girl, you know, the translation. They're obviously talking about something in code. Have I been convinced that it's pedophilia and children? And I'm concerned that there's not one victim has come forward, but no one has seen anything weird come out of that restaurant. And to sort of branch on to this, my friend who committed suicide last year, Stuart Lupton, who was in this band, Jonathan Fireeater, he was dating a chef of Comet Pizza, and he's been brought into it as possibly being in, you know, there's videos, you know, that connect him into Pizzagate, which I find, you know, really outrageous. And knowing him, I know he wasn't involved in Pizzagate, but I can see how, you know, if you're making connections and you're connecting the dots, that it may look like, you know, may look like that, but, you know, I happen to have known him, and have known that that wasn't the case. So I think they are creepy people. I think their Instagrams are creepy, but that's just not enough. And I could be wrong. I'll be the first one to stand up. If there more evidence comes out, I'll be the first one to stand up and say, I was wrong. I was stupid. I was naive. This is absolutely, you know, it's just, there's not enough evidence for me to, you know, to believe it yet. That's just where I am at it.
Yeah.
But it started me really thinking about making an episode about how do we disagree? How do we disagree? And how do we kind of increase our tolerance for disagreement without making it personal? Because I really believe that debate and discussion is important. I think it makes people smarter. I think it's, you know, an important part of, you know, the human experience. And how do we do that without turning off and pushing someone away? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think, on your last point first, I think that's the key. I think you can't, anytime people disagree, it's because there's like a miscommunication, between the, like an agreed set of like, we agree on like there's a reality. I just totally agree. Real talk with you, Roberta. I also have personal friends involved with, the Pizzagate thing. And I think it's so crazy. I don't want to like call them out, but, I have like friends of friends. A friend of a friend is the guy that painted the murals on the wall there. I have a bunch of connections, and it's so much of a gray area. There's so much of a gray area in between. I think it feeds into when we don't communicate, when we can't openly, debate and disagree, civilly, it creates this like monster of things. Like, I start to suspect the worst about people I know, and it's not for good reason. It's because there are things going on. It's tough. I think there are two worlds colliding. I do think there's a lot to Pizzagate. I'll tend to argue towards it being a real thing. Not that I think that everything that people say about it is true, but even the hardest part is that the thing that they use to debunk it, is that they say that everybody says that there was like a sex ring in the basement, but there's no basement. What I think inflames the argument for the conservative side is that one, there's an article, from the contemporary to the Pizzagate theory where James Alefantis talks about the basement in his building. So he says that there's a basement in the building. So that was going to lead me into the West Memphis 3 thing that, do you think,
sure.
Okay. I think there's this element to like people just bold-faced lying, with disregard to the law and everything. And I think that sometimes can be so powerful that it does things like people, like with the West Memphis 3 case, there's people who are guilty by law that aren't being punished essentially because they're just kind of like saying they didn't do it now.
Like, yeah, I think with the West Memphis 3, you have to take in the amount of money. And the two things that are really, there's many things that are really interesting about that case. But for one, they had $10 to $20 million. That number has never been debunked by supporters. Thrown all at releasing the West Memphis 3. They haven't done anything to exonerate themselves, even though they said they would. But, you know, the amount of money is hard. So just look at O.J. Simpson said that. I think he put $1 million, and he got himself acquitted. So we're looking at 10 to 20 times O.J. money, Dream Team money, right? Okay? And so that buys a lot of PR. And when you have that kind of powerful PR, there has been no articles, mainstream articles, that are critical or even factually accurate about the facts of that case. And that's hard for people to believe, that we are in the age of such propaganda and PR and lies. It goes against everything that's American, that we are self-determined, and that we can make up our own minds, and that we determine our own destiny, and we don't like to think that we can be brainwashed or deceived or led astray. That's like a very uncomfortable idea for Americans. But with the West Memphis 3, it is a full-out propaganda campaign.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you said it perfectly, but something like this undermines the values that the country stands on. It's sort of like so underhanded of an attack. It's crazy. It's insane. I think if people look at that case, and it might be worth, I'll try to prep better questions for another interview about this subject, because I don't think people, I think every time that I, like for just for myself, when I realized what was going on, it blew my mind. I was like, I couldn't believe it. So that
it definitely is mind blowing, and I think it's hard for people, especially true crime people, to understand that that's the blueprint. If you look at Adnan Syed's or Syed's case, the serial that Serial is based on, there's just a new HBO documentary that Amy Berg, who directed the last West Memphis 3 documentary, West of Memphis, she directed. That campaign to free Adnan Syed is based on the West Memphis 3. So his advocate, Rabia Chaudhry, saw Paradise Lost, and she is aiming to get an Alford plea. That is her whole, she really followed that blueprint. So who watch true crime should really pay attention to the West Memphis 3 case.
Will you explain what's an Alford plea again? I'm sorry.
That's a great question. An Alford plea is legally, it goes down as a guilty plea. So you admit that there was enough evidence to convict you, that the prosecution had enough evidence to convict you, but you still maintain your innocence. So Damien Echols, who is a legal rarity, twice convicted child killer, who is walking the streets now, spent 18 years on death row. He got out on an Alford plea, right? So he can go around saying he's innocent, legally, whatever, without. But he is guilty at law. He is a child killer on probation, and he was treated with open arms on red carpets with Johnny Depp. And every time you read in a mainstream publication about him, it will always start with wrongfully convicted. And right now, as we speak, he's about to do, in March, at Town Hall in New York, a kind of Roxy Hart, Belma Kelly duo with Amanda Knox about it's called Wrongfully Accused. Not only were they were convicted. They weren't just accused. They were convicted. And Amanda Knox is really interesting because her exonerating decision, of the Third Court of Italy, says that she was there the night of the murder and she washed the blood of the victim off her hands, but there wasn't enough evidence to convict her. I mean, that's a political decision, I think, but, I wouldn't be running around if I got that, determination by a bunch of judges. I wouldn't be running around saying I was wrongfully convicted or accused.
Well, if you got an Alford plea.
If you got the Alford plea, I wouldn't be doing it either. I mean, I would just be hanging. First of all, I can't imagine killing three kids, but the fact that they go around playing the victim is disgusting, and it's so disrespectful to the memory of the people that they killed.
Okay.
And the families, and it just causes a whole bunch of pain.
last question, yeah. Then probably, hopefully, sure. this will be a good wrap up question. We're opening cans of worms, I feel like, okay. My last question is with a lot of these cases, the courts, we have like a sort of rule of leaving out religion, from being a part of a case. And I think that I believe in that. And as an American, I think it's important to protect freedom of religion. But at the same time, I think that, I was just going to ask, do you think that these people have a religious affiliation to, being like essentially like this, like we can do whatever we want because we have money and we control stuff? Like, do you think that's...
You mean Crowleyism? Are you talking about Aleister Crowley and sure. Jimmy Nichols?
I think...
connection with that? Is that the question?
Well, I love William Ramsey's work, and I think he does a great job of pinning... I think he does a good job of pinning it on Crowley, but I think Crowley's he's a great representation of that, but that idea, I think in my 33 years of living, I've seen that,
yes.
that same mentality play out in different scenarios, whether it's someone who consciously doesn't realize it, or someone who's a part of like a club that does, you know, ritual murders or something. I think that it's the same mindset that runs through it. I guess I'm sort of talking about
Crowley. Well, I've thought about that a lot. I mean, I've even thought about, are these murder? I mean, you know, I've gone so far as to entertain the idea, are these murderers being promoted as a way of toughening up society? So instead of having, you know, like Martin Luther King or Gandhi be, you know, the figurehead for, you know, freedom and justice, and you know what I mean? We got Damien Echols. He's somehow the spokesman for justice. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
It subconsciously so puts this belief in your mind that,
right?
It reinforces the belief that the world is like that. Like when someone like that is propped up, it subtly reinforces in our brain that it's true that whatever God would do something like that, is the God that's in control. Like it's, and when you realize, it's, yeah, because we believe that I would believe that until I realized that there's somebody who's got a bunch of money who chose someone like for that reason, like until you see the wizard behind the curtain.
You know what, I have more questions than answers. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I'll bring up that question to myself. Do I have an answer? No. Does it seem like, since, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, does it seem like society's moving in a way where our compassion, our connection, is being kind of, you know, taken from us, and we're really valuing things like toughness and callousness and really cruelty. We seem to be valuing that. Those used to be bad things growing up, you know, and compassion yeah. for other people used to be good things, but it just seems like that's not, you know, that isn't the way that we're moving. So,
yeah,
you know,
I
think about these things too. I have answers to them. You know, I don't have enough information to have, you know, set answers where I can, I have a lot of, you know, examples of it, but do I have an answer of where it's coming from and why? And no, you know,
I would suggest that if there is someone behind the scenes, like if it's as focused as there being, you know, men and maybe women, doing this behind the scenes, like on purpose, it's interesting that, if you think about it, no matter how much power and money you can put behind that, the remedy to fix it is just not, like recognizing it, because it's incredibly powerful until people see it. So like even so if it's less than a real person, then we can definitely deal with it. And if it's an actual evil man behind the curtain, then we can still deal with it, I would say. If that.
Can I say one other thing? I know we're wrapping up, but
yeah.
Thank you. So yeah, I just want to say one thing. Like, you know, I know it's unpopular, but a lot of answers to human problems are through human connection. You know, like I volunteer every week, you know, helping others. I feel like it's a great way to keep my mentally healthy and connected. You know, be involved in your community, see your friends. I mean, these just, you know, instead of going on Prozac, maybe see some friends, be part of something, be proactive, do things that you enjoy. I just don't think there's enough stress on that. Do you know what I'm saying?
I
think that's one way on a very, like, real level to deal with all these things that it just seems like an injustice factory sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's great. I think it's a good combo. Cause I think it's important to know about stuff. I say the same thing, and I don't think what you're saying is in any way detracting from, obviously, from like looking into things. So, I think that's very important and very true. I agree. So I thank you so much, Roberta. I think we're at a good wrap up point. So yeah, this has been really fun. This is my first interview, and I appreciate you've been, a gracious guest.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me about this stuff.
Alrighty. Yeah, hopefully we can do this again sometime. Maybe talk about, get into the West Memphis 3 and what went on there. Like, why are we saying that there's people that are guilty that are walking in the streets?
Yeah, that's a great case to talk about. It's a really interesting case. Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. All right. Great to talk to you, Roberta.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Okay,
bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello.
Hello. Howdy, howdy.
Say again?